beautiful. I am so impressed by those poems. We were talking. That's just, I'm a little nervous following those. So thank you. Thank you, Ben. And thank you, Paul, for, there you go. Thank you. And I want to say shout out to our Romy, Dylan, and Leanne, the kids that are here.
Who all know what popular means.
Anyway, totally great. Okay, so yeah, thank you. The first poem I'm going to read is I'm starting off with a poem that it's about a student of mine. And when I read this, after I moved away, an article that was in the newspaper where she was unfortunately shot by her boyfriend. And so the article, the headliner was, my poem's titled Invasive, and her name is Brianne Ort. Lost to gun violence on October 16th, 2016, in Altamont Springs, Florida. Brianne's boyfriend killed her, then herself. An entire alphabet can be stuttered in a few gunshots. So often, it's the boyfriend spiraling down the chamber, his words lodged in the barrel behind the bullet, fast and frenzied. We all wonder why the trash at the dump never stops burning, why the blind look to the wind. The rain stumbles outside the window, the tombe before the heavy pas de bourrée of storm. Cathedral de San Marco in Venice speaks two languages, Greek and Latin, and I'm jealous of those with two tongues, like the white pine whose trunk cracks and whose needles whistle to the bilingual nuthatch. The sun torches the tips of the trees on a descent from a world where no woman is safe. Even the man who loved her wanted her dead. The burning bush is an invasive species in Vermont, yet cardinals and chickadees flock to its red seeds and flame leaves in the fall. I should cut it to a stump and rot its roots, but instead I admire its show of color, watching the damage as it spreads. I did want to mention that birds are often a motif in many of my poems. And then I was thinking, Vermont birds and local birds, to where I'm living in Vermont and even where I used to live, which was in Florida in the States, don't translate here necessarily. And so I was looking up and I found out that the chickadee, which I open, my first poem has a chickadee in it, my last poem will have a chickadee in it, is similar to the Irish coal tit, I guess. So if anyone's a birder or knows that bird, I guess it's similar. So, moving on.
Heard of the chickadee, but I've never heard of the Irish coal.
Oh, funny. Okay. I love the chickadee. Well, we didn't have chickadees in Florida either, so I've fallen in love with them since I've moved to Vermont. So I recently left Florida, and I'm moving. It's a completely different landscape. I went from, 90-degree weather to now weather that's very similar to here, actually. It's chilly and snows a lot. It's almost Canada, so very close to that. Yeah. All right. So my next poem is titled, On the Death of My Father, Thomas Melvin Gibbs. I'm going to do a little singing too, so you'll have to forgive my lack of voice. All too often, my back betrays me as I pick up the lightest pillow while making my bed, or bend to brush my hair after a hot shower. So I'm forced to walk crooked, arched to one side like a preacher from the God-soaked South. Reverend Howard Finster played the banjo and sang about a small tack in the shingle of his roof. Come on back and stay with me, come on back and stay with me, make the little house what it ought to be. He paced back and forth on the stage of the Tonight Show in a suit like any suit my Appalachian father might have worn. Bought secondhand, collar white as a flag, his hair gray, combed, greased, bucket high. He even wore those same black boots with a slight heel, zippered at the side, like shiny, gritty teeth peering out below his pant leg. His outsider art graces the album cover of Little Creatures by the Talking Heads, and a vision of his dead sister climbing from heaven and the memory of his brother burned alive were enough to make him born again and to preach the word by age 16. When the sun sets around these parts, it tries to gun down all the trees, but settles for bullet holes and street signs, especially those announcing a deer crossing or to stop, because who wants to stop? My father died 5 years before Reverend Fenster was no preacher, except maybe to whoever lived at the bottom of all those bottles he was hell-bent on emptying. Sumerians thought to translate footprints birds left in the mud near the edge of the Euphrates. They thought the prints to be a secret cuneiform. After 5 hallelujahs, we can be saved, right? How many texts do we need to know to make it into heaven? So many signs to translate for our own salvation. We can bend over the lines and read them out loud until our throats are dry and our backs break. Days I go to the mailbox and find letters from my dead husband translating for me his suicide. The cold blade softened into cursive. His fear licked onto the stamp as the return address, the date of his death. I look forward to these letters. Some are addressed to my son. I collect and keep those. At times, this is a greedy act, but he is too young. I see my body asleep in my son's body, my eyes behind his eyes. But now I worry that there is distortion, like Parmigiano's self-portrait in a convex mirror. His hand partly reaches out to me, partly curls back into itself. When I was a girl, my uncle mailed to me framed collections of mounted butterflies. Blue morpho, tiger wing, malachite, moon satyr. These are all names my husband could take now. I imagine him as Goldman's Eucalyptia or Great Eurybia. I know that to kill a butterfly, you use a killing jar. Because they're so fragile, sometimes butterflies batter themselves in the killing jar. At night, this makes me wonder about the mixing spoons in the bowl, the tangles of the dough, the small, temporary fight. For a clean kill, it is better to first stun the butterfly by pinching its thorax. But you must practice to get this method right, so it is recommended to try it on common moths and butterflies you're not concerned about. Pinch smartly between your finger and thumb, like tweezing a piece of sky. And my next poem just has, it mentions briefly a type of soup that we were cooking in Tuscany when we were able to spend a little time there and write. And also near the cathedral, San Biagio is there. So this mentions those two things. The soup is ribollita, which some people may know or may hear. It's got bread in it. The soup has bread in it. In a Tuscan farmhouse, I cook ribollita, a peasant soup of white beans, crumbled bread, and kale, as the Campanile di San Biagio rings in the centuries. Though not Catholic, maybe not even Christian, I kneel in the shadow of this church and look deep inside the sleeves of a sweater I've worn too many months. 3 years ago, after taking his own life, the husband I knew burned in a box I chose from several boxes. I chose his clothes, the urn, and in the end, asked for him to look like death, not a false life. Yet here I am, considering a soup hundreds of years old, the golden altar of the Madonna di Bon Viaggio, and the sound of bells in the lower fields near our farm. I know the path to San Biagio like I know the roof of my mouth. Bells like foil between my teeth, electric. The scent of footprints might confuse the dead, but each night I end up between the sheets, windows open in the last hour of lovemaking among bedbugs and common centipedes. In my new husband's arms, trafficking old scars, I hear the prune plums fall from the trees. I will collect and skin them in the morning. Okay, I'll read a couple more. But this is a very short one, and it's in a form, and I don't write in form very odd, as you can kind of see. But this is a form that was developed by Terrence Hayes, yes. And it's called The Golden Shovel, and it's based on the poet Gwendolyn Brooks. And the idea is you take one of her lines of poetry, and it's the last, each word is of that line is the last word in each of your lines. So down the back of my lines, her line was, when we speak to each other, our voices are a little gruff. So that's how each line will end with one of those words. So. And so mine is titled Golden Shovel Buddha. A warrior I am not, even when I try my hardest. I am a disciple of we, a follower of union. And I speak clearly of the rickshaw of love to anyone who will listen. Each of us must come to the edge of the other, either in this life or the next. Ours is a marriage sifted from old mistakes and voices tickled like a wristwatch. A reminder, we are on a well-worn path, king-sized and cherry, like a carved Buddha reclining in a gift shop window, whose little hands are like all hands, full of patience and a little gruff. I'll do last two. And this is a poem dedicated to my son, who's sitting over there in the middle of the kids. I don't know that I can say anything about it. It was written right after, it was like the day after his 19th birthday. So this is, the poem's titled, I like to embarrass him in this way right now. The directions for my son on his 19th birthday. No. No, this is very, very serious. Okay. I cup my hands to hold your youth, to try to show you how to do the same. It takes decades of practice to get this right, and by then, it is always too late. Yesterday, a man stabbed a homeless man on Church Street. At dinner, we tucked this story between bites of salmon, pieces of song by Fleetwood Mac melting from the speaker. It rained all day today. I told you that I always thought I'd have another baby. In truth, I knew I was only good for one. No matter how hard you press the outer edges of your palms and pinkies together, they will always leak. You should know that you can't hold water in your palm for long. Don't put yourself in a spot where you'll have to carry all you will need. At dusk, we count 4 rabbits on the back lawn, and I consider if it's a sign, only to watch the stalking feral tabby turn them from humble bronze, heavy and frozen from hope and hopefully downwind. At least once a year, you should close your cupped hands like a book. Not to worry, hinged, they always open again. I'm going to finish on with this poem. It ends with a chickadee again, one of my favorite new birds. And it takes place, I mean, the title is based on a mountain in Vermont called Hawk Mountain. On Hawk Mountain. I am parting with the sun that, like a Greek oracle, descends the temple of mountains before me. Their silhouette darkens to Oxford blue, elides the current of the sky until I no longer see crest or peak. After moving up from the south, how much should I know of coniferous trees or of chickadees who play their winter song of Phoebe, Phoebe, the last note toppling an octave from the first like a softly closing door. The northern sky stands so straight, it uses the largest pines for crutches. They bend under its weight. We have a friend who isn't happy I'm white. With him, though, the road is just sampling the sound of the rain. So my husband and I hold hands as often as we can, each finger erupting a new continent. But in the early evening, I worry that if pulled over by the police, when my husband lifts his empty hands, he is lifting only his blackness. At this hour, a chickadee cries in staccato, dee, 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 dee. I wonder how it knows my name before I look at our marriage in the milky evening light.